It is fascinating to see her like this, through the bubbles and glaze of the ice walls. It's hard to see her expression, although Boa will always remember the contorted fury on her face. I did it. I tricked her. I freed myself. Finally, after all this time, longer than she could possibly have guessed. I'm the only Jerboa now. She hesitates, then writes in the scroll, "Return all Boa's memories. Gently," she adds in a hasty scrawl. It's still too much. It's so much. All the times they fought, and Jerboa just flicked the memories away like bugs so Boa would be pleasant again. All the promises she made and broke with a snap of her claws. The conversation about making a brother came back, and Boa clutched her stomach. Did it ever happen? Was there another damaged dragonette in their past, or had she convinced her mother and spared someone else her fate? No brothers appeared, no sisters either. Boa was alone with her mother throughout all the centuries of memories. But there were servants here and there, dragons that Jerboa kidnapped and enchanted. Boa had loved some of them. She would have run away with them if she could have. Her memories gave her no clues about what happened to them when Jerboa was done. Did she wipe their memories and throw them back out into the world? Or something worse? All Boa could see were days where she was happy, building sand castles with a rain wing, or swimming with a sea wing, and then the next day they'd be gone, along with all her memories of them. I have had friends. I just never knew it. Maybe she can cast a spell to find them. Maybe some of them are still alive. Maybe she can restore their memories, and they'll be so happy to see her. What if I search for them and find out something terrible, though? She's not sure she's ready to face every truth about her mother right now. And there are so many other, less traumatizing things she can do with all her wonderful magic. She can make everyone on the whole continent be friends with her. She can make herself queen of the Kingdom of Sand, if she wants to. She has all the power her mother had, but she's not going to use it to torture one dragonette for hundreds of years. She's going to use it to be happy, to have a completely different life. But first things first, she needs to get this frozen monster out of her doorway. Boa touches the shell around her neck. It gives her instant teleportation to wherever her mother is, the first spell Jerboa ever made at her request. That could still be useful if she puts her mother in the right place. She rests one talon lightly against the chilly ice wall and looks through the dark whorls to where she thinks she can see her mother's eyes. "I enchant this block of ice to bury itself under this hut and stay frozen there forever." The ice and her mother vanish, and the hut shakes slightly, as though something is settling in the sand below it. But Boa doesn't even get a moment to be thrilled. Pain lances through her, sharp and blinding, and she shrieks at the unexpected agony. When the first wave of pain passes, she opens her eyes, gasping, and sees that one of her claws is gone. It's been sliced off as if someone took a hatchet to it, and there is blood everywhere, although the claw itself has vanished into thin air. "What?" she whispers. "What?" Did she cast the spell wrong? Maybe she was accidentally touching the ice block with that talon, and it took a piece of her with it? Or... no, 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 no. Somehow she knows, in a space beyond knowing. She can't see the shape of it yet. She still has to figure out how and what exactly this is, but she is certain of one thing. Her mother did this to her. She is sitting by the freshwater pond, washing the blood off her newest stump. 6 claws gone. When she has lost all of them, what will go next? Her ears, her horns, her tail barb. Her wings. She shudders. She has to be so, so careful with her spells. There's no way to know which one will cause enough damage to kill her She lost her second claw trying to heal the first one, and it only half worked. The wound closed, covered over with a shiny new layer of scales, but her claw did not grow back. She used a normal bandage on the second injury and thought for a long time. Her third claw? Sacrificed for information. She enchanted a scroll to truthfully answer any question she asked of it. Through the pain and the spinning stars around her head, she made it tell her what her mother had done. One final curse. She should have expected it, should have enchanted something to protect herself. But she'd had to move fast when she found the boa-changing scroll in the piles of bags her mother had forced her to carry across the desert. Her mother was so rarely careless, or perhaps Boa was rarely smart and alert enough to catch her when she was. And now Jerboa has left her this, a last spell that was a masterpiece of awfulness. Every time Boa tries to use animus magic, she will lose a piece of herself, bit by bit, until she dies of her wounds. The spell specifies that the pieces could not grow back, even with magic, and it is reinforced with words of binding that mean there is no way to reverse it or fight it. Boa tried, anyway, which is how she lost claws 4 and 5. It didn't seem fair that she could be injured by spells that didn't even work. Her mother learned a lot over the years about what animus dragons could do to each other and how to word spells so other dragons couldn't break them. Boa remembers all the horror stories now. Everything her mother told her to try to scare her away from animus magic. But she'd never taught her anything. Boa knows nothing about protecting herself as an animus. And I'm not a normal animus. I'm cursed. All right. So, she can live without magic. She is still free of her mother. This is her chance to have the normal life she always wanted, free in the world, meeting other dragons. Maybe it wouldn't be the glamorous enchanted whirlwind she'd imagined, but it would be 1,000 times happier than her life up to now. She would be herself. She would choose her own path. She would be free. At that point, she had looked at her maimed talons and realized it would be hard to walk into any dragon village and make friends looking like this. She'd have a lot of explaining to do. So, then, goodbye to her sixth claw, as a new spell was added to the shell necklace, casting a glamour so that she looks normal and intact to any dragons who see her. No one will ever see what her mother did to her or know how much pain she is in. Boa still has several objects her mother enchanted, and she knows what about half of them do. Her information scroll can tell her the rest. She might even be able to sell a few of them to a queen somewhere, if she dares to risk it. And if she's ever in danger, one thought will bring her right back here, to this hut by the ocean, to the floorboards that cover her mother's grave, where she can dance and dance, and no one will ever tell her to stop or cast a spell to make her fall over or enchant away her love of music for 100 years. I hope you didn't die thinking you'd won, Mother, she says out loud. Because unlike you, I can control myself. I don't need to use my magic. I'm going to be happy, despite everything you've done to me. She spreads her wings and lifts into the sky. She is taking a break from other dragons. She does this occasionally, goes back to her hut for 50 years or longer. Until everyone she's met this time around has forgotten about her, and she can come back as someone new. It might have been longer than 50 years this time, though. Has it been closer to 100? It's so peaceful on her beach, all alone with the waves. In the cities, around other dragons, she is constantly tempted to use her magic, even knowing the pain it will cause her. But here, she never thinks of spells she wishes she could use. She can just be. She has one friend, a dragon who knows the truth about her. They met by accident, before Glacier became queen, but Glacier is not like other queens. She believes in solving her own problems, and she knows how dangerous animus magic can be. She also knows the cost Jerboa has to pay every time she uses her magic. Jerboa took off her glamour once, so Glacier could see her as she really is. She was surprised when Glacier cried. No one has ever felt sorry for her before, or told her that it's not fair, everything she went through. In all the years they've known each other, even through the recent war, Glacier has never asked Jerboa for a single spell. Once, Jerboa asked her about that, and Glacier said, "You should save your magic. Someday, the world might really need it, and you'll be the only dragon who can save everyone." Jerboa had laughed. "Me? Like a hero?" "Why not?" Glacier had answered. "Don't you think you're here for a purpose?" 2,000 years was a long time to wait for a purpose, Jerboa thinks. Maybe she'll have to invent one, eventually. She is strolling down the empty beach toward the water, thinking about what kind of fish she'll catch for dinner, when the universe suddenly crumples inward, and an unfamiliar voice says, clear as a bell,
"Bring them here, every animus dragon in all the 7 tribes. Bring them here to my throne room right now."
And before she can think, or breathe, or run, she finds herself standing in a sunlit, black marble throne room. In front of her is the largest dragon she's ever seen, a Nightwing-Icewing hybrid, menace radiating off him. He has his back to her, and as she appears, 3 more dragons appear in front of him, 2 sea wings and another Nightwing, all looking completely terrified. Jerboa doesn't hesitate. Centuries of reacting to fear have trained her well. She is barely in the room for a moment before she seizes her necklace and whisks herself home again. She is in her hut, her heart pounding, her claws sinking into the weathered wooden floor, which she has replaced several times over the years, but always in the same spot, where her mother is buried.
"Thank you, Mother. For once, one of your spells has saved me."
The magic has brought her home, but is she actually safe? Who was that? And all those other dragons, are there really 5 animus dragons in Pyria right now? Didn't Mother say the limit was 1? How is this possible? She scrambles over to her trunk and tosses everything in it aside to get to her answers scroll.
"Tell me who that was," she says.
The writing goes on for a while. The scroll is usually very concise, but it seems to have a lot to say about this Darkstalker. His past, his history. "He was alive back when my mother was," she thinks. The spell that tucked him away, the mistake that freed him, the Nightwings who follow him.
"What does he want with animus dragons?" she asks.
"To control them," the scroll answers. "To use their magic instead of his own, to preserve his soul, and to be sure that they can never be any threat to him."
Jerboa shudders, feeling sick. What if he'd been facing her? What if he'd gotten his claws on her and forced her to use her magic? What if he found it amusing to watch her slowly sliced into pieces until she died?
"I have to protect myself against him. I have to cast something to make myself invulnerable to his spells, or something to make me more powerful than him."
She reaches for one of her copper bracelets, then hesitates, struck by a chilling thought. Why did he summon all the animus dragons right now?
Because his magic told him someone was casting animus spells, and he was afraid they might be against him.
She asks quietly, "He can tell when someone uses animus magic?"
"Yes."
"Can he sense me right now?"
"No. His spell only searches for new enchantments."
"How can I protect myself against him?"
"That answer is not available yet."
She knew it would say that. It can't see the future or tell her what's going to happen. It is sort of useless when she needs to hide or make plans or, for instance, when there's a big ominous magic user haunting the land. Once she tried asking it, "How long will I live?" And it answered, "Until you die," which was neither comforting
nor helpful.
Maybe this is it. Her purpose.
Maybe she's the only dragon in Pyria who can stop him, if she can come up with just the right spell.
Is this my purpose?
She asks the scroll, knowing what it will say. That answer is not available yet.
I could kill him, couldn't I? With one stroke of magic? Or put him back to sleep under the mountain the way he was before?
Except, if he's as old and dangerous and powerful as her scroll says.
Has Darkstalker protected himself from other dragons' animus magic? She asks.
Yes. She stands up and starts pacing around the hut. The world is in danger, and there's nothing she can do. In a way, it's a relief, because she would rather hide here. But it feels wrong. It feels as though there should be something, if she can only think of it.
She is outside, recovering her fishing nets before the storm destroys them, when she sees a flare of golden fabric up in the rain clouds. She watches for a moment, and then sees that it's attached to an unconscious dragon. The wind is blowing her into shore, some ways south of Jerboa's hut. Jerboa holds the nets in her talons, thinking for a moment, and then she hurries back inside. Darkstalker was defeated not long ago. No thanks to her. She did nothing at all. She had the perfect spell, but she was too afraid to use it. That it wouldn't work. That it would backfire somehow, and she'd be caught and lose all her freedom again. But she can't stop thinking about it. 5 animus dragons, all alive at the same time. It was so wrong. The universe was out of joint. Even with Darkstalker gone, how could the rest be trusted? What if they turned on one another and took the world down with them? What if one of them found out about her and forced her to use her magic? What if any of them were like her mother? Or, almost equally scary, there's the new Icewing Queen. Jerboa wishes she had met Snowfall in time to save Glacier. But she didn't, and now she's linked to this tempestuous, paranoid, terrified young queen who wants to use Jerboa's magic all the time. She has ideas upon ideas for animus spells that will benefit her kingdom. Or, at least, keep them walled off and away from all other dragons forever. Jerboa doesn't know how many times she can safely say no. What if Queen Snowfall brings her army next time? What if she locks Jerboa up and tortures her into doing magic? She could be on a path to becoming another Queen Scorpion. Jerboa remembers all those stories from her mother very clearly. She pulls out her scroll. Who is the dragon that just blew in on the storm? She asks. Her name is Luna. She comes from Pantala, the land across the sea. Jerboa's ears twitch. A dragon from across the sea. Why is she here?
By accident.
Is she dangerous?
Only to those who threaten the dragons she loves.
Jerboa likes the sound of that. Is she my purpose?
That answer is not available yet.
Does she need help?
Yes.
Does anyone else know she's here?
A Nightwing has had a vision about her and will be here to find her soon.
Jerboa is a little nervous of Nightwings at the moment. But if she finds Luna first, if she introduces them, she could be part of something important. Bringing the continents together. Is that a good idea, though?
Does Pantala have animus magic? She asks.
No.
What if the animus dragons here decide to take over Pantala? They could do anything to them, with all that magic here, and none over there. It's time to use her spell. Time to fix everything. Dragons can't be trusted with animus magic. Jerboa knows that better than anyone. She lifts a small glass candle holder down from a shelf. It's curved and glittering, and she loves it. But sacrificing it will make the spell more powerful. I hereby enchant this candle holder, she whispers. When I shatter it, I shatter the power of all current animus dragons. From now on, no new spells cast by any animus dragon alive today will ever work again.
Also, from this point forward, I will grow old and die like any normal dragon. I make this spell irreversible by any animus, including myself.
She cups her talons around the candle holder, then hurls it to the floor. It explodes into a million shimmering pieces, and Jerboa screams with pain. Her tail barb is gone. She guesses the price for such a big spell was necessarily higher than all the others she's cast, but it's hard to think through the agony. Jerboa drags herself outside, trying to stem the flow of blood and get to the pond.
I didn't, I think. I hope it worked.
She is in too much pain to test it by trying another spell right now.
With luck, that was my last animus spell ever. Tomorrow, I will find Luna, bring her back here, and keep her safe until the Nightwing comes for her. Then they can figure out how to unite the continents safely, without any magic at all. And I won't have to be afraid of someone controlling me. I don't have to be scared of what animus magic can do anymore. And no one will ever ask me for anything, ever again.
Chapter 23 Snowfall was awake before anyone else the next morning, which surprised her, because she felt as though she'd been asleep for centuries. For 2,000 years, to be more specific. That was the first time her visions had done that. Dragged her from one into another, on and on through someone's lifetime, and then into a different dragon's, hopping through time. But she understood why. She needed to see all of that to understand Jerboa, her Jerboa, and what she'd done. She made a small pile of snow and started sculpting it into a shape while she waited for Lynx and her guards to wake up. The sun was only a thin line of gold off to the east, and the morning air was gloriously cold. Everything was so quiet, so much quieter than the noisy rustling forest or the incessant background chatter of sanctuary. Jerboa broke animus magic, mostly because of me. It's all gone because she was afraid of what I'd make her do. Snowfall knew there was more to it than that. She'd felt everything Jerboa had felt, and she recognized it. She knew so clearly what it was like to be that scared. She'd had her own nightmares about the idea that someone else could take control of you and you'd be powerless, the way Queen Wasp treated the Pentalan dragons, or the way Darkstalker had used his magic against the Icewings and against his own Nightwings, in fact. And she understood why Jerboa hadn't told anybody. Snowfall herself would have been furious if she'd found out, even a few days ago, before the dragons arrived from Pentala, before I put on the ring. Now, though, she realized she wasn't angry at all. She couldn't imagine being angry at Jerboa anymore, now that she'd experienced a tiny bit of Jerboa's life. And she wondered if Jerboa was right to do what she did. How could you be sure who could be trusted with animus magic? The first Jerboa had seemed like a good, normal dragon in the first vision, but the magic, or the power, had obviously changed her over time. Maybe it's not so terrible if we have to figure out how to save the world without magic. She hoped they could do it, the dragons who were on their way to Pentala. She'd do what she could over here, preparing her army in case they were needed. And maybe soon she'd visit Jerboa, just to check on her. It seemed like she needed a friend. That had never even occurred to Snowfall, that Glacier and Jerboa had just been friends, rather than Queen and Animus Dragon who served her. That maybe Jerboa missed Glacier as much as Snowfall did.
Hey, Lynx said, wandering over to her and yawning at the same time. What are you making?
She waved her tail at the little snow creature. Can't you tell? Snowfall asked. Lynx peered at it. I'm afraid I'll have to have you executed if you guess wrong, Snowfall added conversationally.
Add it to my treason list, Lynx replied. Is it a snail?
It is, Snowfall beamed at it, in honor of that absolutely ridiculous Skywing.
It is super cute that you keep thinking about him, Lynx teased, and Snowfall threw a clump of snow at her. All your guards are awake, by the way, and looking very embarrassed that someone wasn't awake and on watch when you woke up.
Snowfall shrugged. I was tired, too. I mean, let's give them some stern looks, but I don't feel like decapitating anyone this morning.
Lynx laughed. On their way back to the palace, Snowfall kept thinking about the two Jerboas, and the fact that the ring had actually answered her question. That was exciting. Even if it had been slightly horrible to experience the first Jerboa's gradual loss of her soul. Snowfall hoped she wouldn't ever become like her, too far removed from other dragons to remember that they had feelings too.
I need to keep dragons like Lynx close by to ask me things like, wait, is that maybe evil? In case I forget to.
They swooped down through the gates, and Snowfall waved to the guards as she flew by. They both looked startled and a little nervous, but those were expressions she was pretty used to seeing on her own ice wings by now. She'd work on that. Low voices were coming from the throne room, so Snowfall headed there first. That was sort of suspicious, actually. Why would anyone be in the throne room while she was away?
Don't be paranoid, she reminded herself. Not everyone is out to get me. I am not Queen Wasp.
She swept to the window and landed right in the center of the grand room. Conversation slammed to a halt all around her. On one side of the throne stood General Ivory, flanked by a few soldiers, looking fierce and bristly. On the other side were Tundra and Permafrost, calm and gleaming and toothy. And on the throne itself, wearing Snowfall's hideous crown, was her little sister, Mink. Snowfall raised her eyebrows at the gathered dragons.
Hello, Mink, she said. That's way too big for you.
Mink reached up and clutched the crown to her head, her giant eyes blinking quickly.
We thought you weren't coming back, Tundra said, in her slippery, well-blubber voice.
I said she was, Ivory growled. You wouldn't listen.
We thought it was highly unlikely that you'd leave a lowly soldier in charge rather than one of us,
Permafrost smarmed, flicking his tail between himself and Tundra.
So we assumed something terrible must have happened to you.
You were wrong, Snowfall said pleasantly. And now something terrible is going to happen to you. Thank you for trying, Ivory. Mink, budge over. That's my seat.
No,
Mink yelled, bursting into tears.
I have to be queen. I have to stop the awful, hateful, terrible, bad Nightwings.
Snowfall squinted at her, then exchanged a puzzled glance with Lynx.
The what? She asked.
The Nightwings, Mink sobbed. I hate them so much. They're going to hurt us.
Well, so this made no sense at all.
Mink had never mentioned Nightwings before, that Snowfall could remember. And Mink loved everybody. It didn't even seem possible for Mink to hate someone, let alone an entire tribe.
Was it something I said?
Snowfall tried to remember, but she thought she would have noticed if she'd said, the Nightwings are the worst, Mink, and Mink had said, yeah, let's hate them.
Did you do this? She asked Tundra and Permafrost. Did you make her afraid of the Nightwings?
Tundra lifted her wings.
We haven't said anything about them. I don't know where this came from.
Snowfall was inclined not to believe her, but Tundra looked as confused as Snowfall felt, and it was rare to see her aunt have an actual emotion on her face.
When did she start talking about them?
The moment we made her queen, Tundra said. I mean, temporary queen, of course, just in case you weren't returning.
Uh-huh. A queen you could control a little better than me, I suppose, Snowfall thought. So where did Mink get this new fear of Nightwings?
If Tundra hadn't said anything.
But somehow when she became queen.
Snowfall strode across the room and knocked the crown off Mink's head. Mink yelped and tried to grab for it,
but Snowfall held her at arm's length with the crown in her other talon.
"Aunt Tundra," she said, "what do you know about this crown? When was it made?"
"It's been in the royal family for hundreds of years," Tundra said, sounding quite scandalized. "It's one of the most treasured Icewing heirlooms."
"Yes, yes," Snowfall said, "but who made it?"
Tundra looked at Permafrost, who scratched his neck and mumbled,
"I'm not sure. I believe maybe it's from the time of Queen Diamond."
"Queen Diamond," Snowfall said. "As in the one whose son ran off with a Nightwing?"
"Was kidnapped by a Nightwing," Tundra objected.
"The queen who happened to be an Animus herself," Snowfall said. "Correct."
"Oh," Lynx cried. Tundra shot her a quelling look, but Lynx ignored her, taking a step toward Snowfall.
"You think the crown could be enchanted to make every queen who wears it hate Nightwings as much as Diamond did? But nobody knew it for all this time? That's awful."
Permafrost flapped his jaw for a moment, as if a sealskin rug had come back to life and started questioning his moral authority.
"It's true Queen Diamond was an Animus," he said. But she wouldn't just... That is, she couldn't use her power beyond her one gift to the tribe. She wouldn't, I'm sure of it."
"Well, I'm not," Snowfall said. "And I don't like this thing anyway. So let's be safe and fashionable and destroy it."
"Destroy it?"
Tundra gasped faintly.
"Ooh, we can do that?" Mink asked. "Because I really, really don't like it either, Snowfall. It's so heavy. It hurt my head. Did it hurt yours?"
"Yes, it hurt my head a lot," Snowfall told her. "Ivory, would you take charge of destroying this for me?"
"At once, Your Majesty," Ivory said, with a respectful bow.
She lifted the crown out of Snowfall's talons and flew out of the room with two of her soldiers. Snowfall climbed up on the throne next to Mink. It was big enough for a very old queen, so there was enough room for her to scoot in beside her sister. She put one of her wings around Mink, who snuggled into her side, closed her eyes, and sighed with relief.
"I don't have to be queen," Mink whispered.
"You are not allowed to be queen right now," Snowfall said kindly. "I'm going to be queen for a long time."
"Good," Mink said. "I'm sorry so many dragons keep telling you what to do, though. That was my least favorite part."
"It'll be better if it's the right dragons," Snowfall said. "I just have to ignore the ones I don't trust." She shot a significant look at Tundra and Permafrost.
"The crown was magic?" Mink asked. "Does that mean I don't have to hate the Nightwings?"
"That's right. It was just a spell." Snowfall bopped Mink's head with her snout. "It'll wear off. I feel much better about Nightwings after being away from the crown for a few days. Plus, I bet if you meet any, you'll love them immediately, just like you love everybody else."
"Oh, I'd like that," Mink said. "I love you the most, though."
Snowfall laughed. "I met a Skywing you would adore," she said. "I didn't realize until right now that he reminded me of you."
"Your Majesty," Tundra said frostily, "as the wall has been neglected for a number of days, despite my best efforts, perhaps you would appreciate a few updates about the behavior of the palace Icewings in your absence."
"Ah, yes," Snowfall said. "Thank you for reminding me. Mink, want to see something cool?"
I do,
Mink sang, as Snowfall led her through the halls and out into the courtyard.
Tundra trailed after them, protesting that the queen needed more information before she started rearranging names. Permafrost had made himself scarce, perhaps realizing that the farther out of Snowfall's sight he was, the fewer spots he'd drop on the list. There were several Icewings out in the courtyard, gathered near the wall or on benches, chatting to one another. A hush spread through them as Snowfall swept by, and she saw a few starting to edge toward the nearest doors.
"Mink," Snowfall said, stopping beside the gift of order. "Do you know what this is?"
Of course I do,
Mink said with wide eyes.
Everybody knows what the wall is. Look, there's me.
She pointed to her name on the dragonette's side.
I'm here, which means those dragons up there are better than me, but I'm still better than this dragon, and this dragon, and this dragon, and this dragon, and all these dragons,
she said, tapping one name after another below hers. Snowfall winced. It was somehow so much worse to hear something like that from someone as little and sweet as Mink.
That's what I thought, too, she said to her sister. But it turns out that makes no sense.
It makes no sense?
Mink echoed, blinking up at her.
You might do better on a math test than this dragon, Snowfall said, pointing to a name below Mink's. But what if he carves a better ice sculpture than you? Then who should be higher on the list?
What?
Mink cried, outraged.
But better than mine? Where? I want to see.
I just mean if he did, Snowfall said.
Humph, Mink said. Not possible. But I love you anyway, polar bear,
she shouted, at one of the little faces peeking out of a window overhead.
What I mean, Snowfall said, is that if you spend all your time worrying about where you are on the list, and who's higher than you, and who's below you, you can't focus on what you do well, or how everybody can do something important, or kind, or clever, no matter where they are on the list. And maybe you start to think the dragons below you aren't as important or special as you are, which is silly.
Mink
said thoughtfully.
She tipped her head up again and yelled,
Polar bear, I think you're very special and important.
Thank you, he called back.
Snowfall wasn't sure this lesson was going quite as well as she'd pictured it in her head. Maybe she should break stuff first, explain it all later. She called up the tiara's strength and slammed her fist into the wall of names. Cracks shot out in all directions, like bolts of lightning, ripping through every name on the list. Tundra shrieked in horror and tried to grab her arm, but Snowfall shook her off easily and did it again, and then again, smashing the wall until it was obliterated, and she was surrounded by a rubble of broken chunks of ice.
Whew!
She said, into the cloud of glittering ice dust around her.
That's better.
But,
Tundra cried. Snowfall realized that Lynx was standing between them, wings spread, to stop Tundra from charging at Snowfall again. Tundra seemed unable to move at the moment, though. She was staring at the space where the wall had been, as though she thought it might magically rebuild itself if she stared hard enough.
Can it do that?
Snowfall gave the broken bits of ice a hard stare of her own. They stayed where they were. No sign of any magical rebuilding.
Don't even try it, ancient ice wall.
As the echoes died away, Lynx started clapping. Mink immediately joined in, beaming, although Snowfall suspected she just loved clapping and didn't entirely understand the enormity of what Snowfall had done.
I just smashed centuries of tradition into literal pieces, she thought, feeling a little dizzy.
But then another ice wing started to clap, and another, across the courtyard. Snowfall saw a few more at their windows applauding, although she also saw some older dragons duck out of sight when she looked, as though they didn't want to be caught with disapproving expressions on.
It's all right. Eventually they'll see that it's better this way.
The gift of order,
Tundra said faintly, and then she collapsed into the snow. Snowfall beckoned two of her guards over and told them to carry Tundra gently to her room and stay until she recovered, in case she needed anything.
This is so exciting,
Mink said to Snowfall, scrambling over and sitting on her foot.
What else can we break? Can I smash something next?
Maybe tomorrow, Snowfall said, resting one wing around her sister. I'll let you wear my tiara and everything. Tonight, I think, I need to have some ice cream and go to sleep.
Snowflakes were drifting from the gray sky, covering everything in quiet sparkles.
I love it when I'm right, Link said.
Snowfall bristled at her.
Who said you were? Maybe I smashed it for my own reasons. I have many opinions that have nothing to do with you.
Link gave her a sideways grin.
What? Snowfall said. Did you mean something else?
Right about what?
Link flicked her tail gently at Snowfall's wings.
About you being the best queen ever, Madam Spiky Face.
Oh.
Snowfall resettled her spikes and nodded regally.
Yes, well, that is the plan.
Chapter 24. She opens her eyes. She is standing in the Forbidden Treasury. She can't see a light globe anywhere, but the niches glow pale blue, and the walls glimmer as though icy fireflies are swimming through them. She is herself. She is Queen Snowfall. She feels that she is, but she holds her talons out and turns them over, just to be sure. The opal ring is still there, on her claw. She took off everything else before bed, though. The tiara and all her weapons. This is her palace. She is the queen. And she decided she wasn't going to be afraid all the time anymore. But she is having a vision, isn't she? How can she be having a vision of herself?
Because this is the last one, says a voice behind her.
Snowfall turns. An ice wing is standing there, next to the empty niche labeled Gift of Vision. Even in the weird light, Snowfall can see that she has unusual scales, like there's a hint of another color beyond the white in each one. Like an opal. The dragon smiles.
That's me, Opal. Nice to meet you, Queen Snowfall.
Snowfall gives her a wry look.
I have a feeling I've been yelling at you for the last several days.
Opal shrugs her wings elegantly. No more than any of the queens who used the ring before you.
Have there been a lot? Snowfall asks. Does every queen put it on at some point?
Not everyone, Opal answers. It's enchanted to appear to those who need it most. Snowfall regards the ring for a moment.
So I needed it because we had to find out what was happening in Pantala and make a connection with the scavengers so they'd help us defeat Queen Wasp.
Opal laughs. I'm glad you used it so well, she says. But no, it's for dragons who become queen before they are ready, to help them take steps toward becoming even stronger queens.
Snowfall raises an eyebrow at her. That's a polite way of putting it, she says. But you mean it's for queens who are a total mess, to teach them to see the world through other dragons' eyes, so they won't be so selfish. Isn't that it?
We don't say that part out loud, Opal admonishes her, but she's clearly hiding a smile. And you weren't a total mess.
Are you really here? Snowfall asks. In the Forbidden Treasury? Just wondering how to find you so I can throw you in my dungeon forever.
Opal laughs again. No, I died a long time ago. I created my one animus gift, and then had a long, happy, normal life as an ice wing. I just left a bit of my spirit in the ring to keep track of the visions and have this last conversation when the ring has finished its work.
I can't believe your original queen agreed to this, Snowfall says, holding up her talon with the ring on it.
She fully did not, Opal says.
Why do you think I made the enchantment the way it is? She became queen before she was ready too, and she was so scared and furious all the time. She asked me for an animus gift that would let her spy on all her enemies, both outside the kingdom and inside her own tribe. I made her this instead.
Wow. Snowfall touches the opal lightly with one claw. I can't believe she didn't execute you the moment she realized she couldn't take it off. That's probably what I would have done, she adds ruefully.
No, you wouldn't have, Opal says with certainty. You would have thrown me in the dungeon, like she did. And then, after a few weeks, if the ring worked the way I enchanted it to, you'd have forgiven me, like she did.
A few weeks? Snowfall lifts her chin proudly and sweeps her tail across the floor. I learned all my vision lessons in just a few days.
Maybe you were closer to ready than even you realized, Opal says. Snowfall looks down at the ice below her feet and hesitates for a moment.
What if I'm not sure I am ready? She asks. Maybe I need a few more visions.
No, Opal says. The ring is magic. It knows exactly how much you need. There's just one more you have to see.
Suddenly, she is standing right in front of Snowfall, and she rests her talons on Snowfall's temples.
And then, Snowfall is not Snowfall anymore, but her mother instead.
Queen Glacier is flying in from a meeting with Blaze, thinking about what a cheerful, brain-dead goose that Sandwing is. Below her in the courtyard, she sees dragonettes playing, and she lands on one of the upper ledges to watch them. Three of them are her daughters, Crystal, Snowfall, and Tiny Mink, who tries to keep up with the other two, but keeps getting stuck in snowbanks. They're playing some kind of made-up game. Glacier can't figure out the rules from up here, but it involves a lot of running and defending particular corners of the courtyard, and snowballs are flying everywhere. Mink tumbles into another pile of snow, and Snowfall grabs her, lifting her to sit on Snowfall's back.
Come on, we can't let them win, she shouts.
She hurtles across the courtyard at ferocious speed, even with Mink clinging to her shoulders, and tackles one of the other ice wings before he can throw a snowball into her corner. She rolls over him, slides him back toward his team, bowling two of them over when he crashes into them, and leaps up with her wings spread wide to block another snowball from another direction. Back in the middle of the courtyard, Crystal is standing still and yawning.
Is it time for lunch yet? She calls.
No! Snowfall shouts back, fending off another snowball and flinging one of her own into her opponent's face.
After this, you're going to quiz me on my kingdom geography, remember?
Crystal sighs elegantly and wanders over to the nearest bench.
If you say so.
The sun warms Glacier's wings as she watches them. Her three perfect dragonettes. Crystal's serenity, Mink's affectionate loveliness, and Snowfall's indomitable ferocity. She loves them so much. She's already decided she won't fight them for the throne. Whichever one decides to challenge her first, she'll step aside and let them have it. She hopes it's Snowfall. She loves them all, but Snowfall will fight for this kingdom like nobody else will. She has some growing up to do first, and Glacier hopes to pay more attention to her after the war is over. But even now, watching her, Glacier can see what a great queen Snowfall could be. Being queen is not easy. Glacier is often exhausted, frustrated, confused, uncertain. She worries for her tribe all the time, and she has inexplicable nightmares about Nightwings. She has to work hard to seem confident in front of the tribe. The crown would be too much for Crystal or Mink. It would crush them. Glacier knows perfectly well that the same is true of Blaze and the Sandwing throne, but she plans to be a strong ally to help her hold it, if Blaze can get herself together and win the war. But Snowfall is strong enough to rule a kingdom and do it well. Glacier is sure of it. Snowfall earns her place at the top of the dragonette's side of the wall day after day, and she struggles and cares and tries and fights, and that's who the Ice Wings need.
We're going to be all right, Glacier thinks,
feeling her shoulders relax for the first time in a while. Watching Snowfall fills her with hope.
No matter what happens, I'll be able to leave the tribe in the right talons.
The courtyard fades away. Snowfall wipes the tears from her snout.
Thank you, she says to Opal.
I just made the magic, Opal says with another shrug. You had to walk the visions.
She holds out one talon. And now you're done.
Shouldn't I keep it a bit longer? Snowfall asks. So I can see what happens to the dragons who are going to Pantala.
It doesn't work that way, Opal says. The gift of vision serves its purpose, and then it disappears again, until the next dragon comes along who needs it.
Snowfall slides the ring off.
She can't believe how easily it moves after all those days of wrestling with it.
Now it feels too big again, wobbling around her claw.
She gives it to Opal, who puts it back in the empty niche. Dark eyes slides across the hole, and the words, "Gift of Vision," vanish until the ring is completely hidden.
"Good luck," Opal says with a smile.
Snowfall woke up late in the morning. She'd finally had a real night's sleep in the royal bed, despite the tiny snuggle monster who'd climbed in beside her during the night. Mink was still asleep. One wing flopped over Snowfall's snout. The ring was gone, which didn't surprise her.
Stupid magic, she thought,
but didn't really feel. She would miss the visions, she realized.
A little bit.
She preferred being herself, always Snowfall, but it felt oddly empty to think she'd never get to walk in someone else's talons again.
Mother believed in me after all. She didn't just choose me because she couldn't have Crystal. She thought I was the right choice.
Snowfall moved Mink's wing off her face and rolled out of bed. Outside the window, the sun was up, and ice wings were darting through the sky, each one catching the light like a flying star. Beyond them, Snowfall could see the ocean, all that moving, glittering water between here and the lost continent of Pantala. Lynx was out there somewhere, flying to meet the rest of the dragons whose talons held the fate of the world.
I hope they survive.
They better survive, or I'm going to be so furious at them.
I hope they stop Queen Wasp and the Breath of Evil. I hope I see Sky and Wren again,
and Sundew and Cricket and all the rest of them.
I hope we're doing enough to save the world.
Epilogue. Raven crept through the tunnel, listening for any sign she was being followed, but she couldn't hear anyone behind her. The darkness pressed in like panther fur, brushing the hairs on her arms. But she knew the path to the abyss well enough to navigate without sight, and as she got closer, she could see the dim green glow that came from its depths. She could also see the skeletal figure that huddled by the edge of the glow. He crouched so close to the terrifying drop, it made Raven dizzy. He didn't turn toward her. His eyes were always fixed on the chasm.
"Fall," she whispered. "I brought you food."
She set her little bundle down as close to him as she dared, then stepped back, out of reach. It had been a long time since Vol threw someone into the abyss, but that was most likely because no one else dared to approach him anymore. Only Raven, who came, even though it was forbidden, and his brother, Mole, who was allowed to keep him alive, but never allowed to speak of him.
"Can you hear it?"
Vol said in his shivery rasp of a voice. He still didn't look at her. He never did.
"I think so," Raven said, sitting on one of the rock formations. "I mean, I hear something, but I don't know what it's saying. Do you?"
The whispers reached the upper caves, winding like long, clinging spiderwebs around the people of the village. She knew they could hear it too, from the way they flinched or hunched their shoulders or hurried away from one another. But no one would talk about it, except Vol.
"It's growing," he said softly. "It's reaching. Soon it will be now, but it needs..."
He trailed off.
"Needs what?" Raven asked.
Suddenly, Vol whipped his head around and met her eyes for the first time in years. Raven jumped and nearly fled back into the dark. His eyes were nothing like they'd been when he was just her friend's funny older brother. Now they were haunted and overlaid with a green shimmer, and they seemed to look right through her.
"It needs a dragon," he hissed.
"A dragon?" Raven curled her fingers around the rough edges of the stone below her.
"Any dragon?"
She wanted to run away, screaming. But if something was changing in the abyss, Vol would be the only one who could tell her, and she had to know.
"You must find the dragon," Vol said, and now his voice was like the crawling cave centipedes, thousands of them, with millions of scuttling legs crossing her skin.
Bring it, the dragon. Save the village.
Wait, Raven said as he turned back toward the abyss. What does that mean? Save the village. From what?
Find the dragon, Vol said, leaning toward the glow. Bring it here.
He let out a long, slithering breath that twined around the whispers from below.
Or everyone you know will die.
A Guide to the Dragons of Pentala. Hive Wings. Description: red, yellow, and or orange, but always mixed with some black scales. Four wings. Abilities: vary from dragon to dragon. Examples include deadly stingers that can extend from their wrists to stab their enemies, venom in their teeth or claws, a paralyzing toxin that can immobilize their prey. Others can spray boiling acid from a stinger on their tails. Queen, queen wasp. Silk wings. Description: silkwing dragonettes are born wingless, but go through a metamorphosis at age 6, when they develop 4 huge wings and silk-spinning abilities, as beautiful and gentle as butterflies, with scales in any color under the sun, except black. Abilities: can spin silk from glands on their wrists to create webs or other woven articles. Can detect vibrations with their antennae to assess threats. Queen, queen wasp. The last silkwing queen, before the tree wars, was queen monarch. Leaf wings. Description: wiped out during the tree wars with the hive wings, but while they lived, this tribe had green and brown scales and wings shaped like leaves. Abilities: could absorb energy from sunlight and were accomplished gardeners. Some were rumored to have unusual control over plants. Queen. Last known queen of the leaf wings was Queen Sequoia, about 50 years ago, at the time of the tree wars.
This is Shannon McManus. We hope that you have enjoyed this production of Wings of Fire, Book 14, The Dangerous Gift, by Tui T. Sutherland. This audiobook was produced by Dion Audio and directed by Jack Heidelman, executive producer Melanie Gagne. Print edition published by Scholastic Press, an imprint of Scholastic Inc. Text copyright 2021 by Tui T. Sutherland. Production copyright 2021 by Scholastic Inc. All rights reserved.